Hello, everyone, and welcome to Patchwork Heart Radio. I'm your host, Bill Snyder, and on today's program, I am blessed to be joined by Dr. Steve Gersovich. He is the president of Key Ministry and serves as the primary vision caster and spokesperson for Key and plays an important role in Key's efforts to develop collaborations with church leaders, both within and outside the disability ministry movement. He is responsible for Key's staff, programs, expansion, and execution of its mission. Dr. Steve is a physician specializing in child and adolescent psychiatry, who has traveled and lectured extensively on family-related topics. Over the course of his career, he has offered over 1,000 presentations to medical professionals, church staff, and volunteers in 47 states. His research has examined the safety and effectiveness of treatments for children with youth with ADHD, anxiety disorders, depression, and schizophrenia. And he has been invited to present on 35 occasions at national or international medical conferences. He has served in leadership roles at two large evangelical churches in his home region and is the principal author of Church for Every Child, Key Ministry's primary blog platform, ranked fourth among all children's ministry blogs in 2015 by Ministry to Children. Steve and his wife Denise live in Chagrin Falls, Ohio, with their two teenage daughters. Steve is a frustrated Cleveland sports fan who spends entirely way too much time in front of the computer and not enough time exercising. I love that. Dr. Steve, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Well, Bill, thanks for having me as well.
So I want to talk to you first about Key Ministry and ask you a little bit more to explain to us about the ministry that Key provides to disabled and their families and friends.
Well, what we're all about at Key Ministry is basically connecting churches and families of kids with disabilities for the purpose of making disciples of Jesus Christ. And we got started with this, or the origins of this go back now about 20 years, in that I was serving on the elder board of my church in suburban Cleveland. And back in the mid-1990s, we had a whole cohort of families who, you know, after the fall of the Iron Curtain, adopted some kids with some very complicated emotional, behavioral, and developmental issues from orphanages in Russia and Bulgaria. And Libby Peterson, who served for a long period of time on our ministry board, was a children's ministry director at the church at the time and a speech and language pathologist by training. So she came into one of the elder board meetings and was talking about some of the things that the church was trying to do to support the families who had adopted kids with these complex disabilities, because all of these families had been highly engaged in church and they were struggling to stay involved because of the challenges in doing church that were associated, you know, with having kids with, you know, some of these issues that they were having in terms of, you know, impulse control, behavior, self-regulating emotions, and the other impacts that it had on the family. So I'm sitting there listening to this, and I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and we didn't do anything in terms of a formal research study, but the thought crossed my mind, well, this is a problem for these families. To what extent is this a problem for the types of families that we would see in a practice like ours, where we work with a lot of, like, you know, kids and parents around issues related to, say, like ADHD or anxiety issues or attachment issues or trauma or mood problems? And so for probably like a 3-month period of time, I just did sort of my own informal survey to try and understand the extent to which having a kid with the issue that led to them coming into our office was a problem for the families in terms of attending church. And I was floored by what I found out. And again, I don't want people to quote this statistic and start circulating something that, you know, isn't well grounded in terms of some sort of research. But if I had to guess, the typical family coming to a practice practice like ours is probably 50% less likely to actually be, you know, at a weekend, you know, worship service or a mass on any given Sunday compared to other families in the community. And so the way that God orchestrated some things is that I had been involved with some research at the time that became very popular. And for probably a 6 or 7 year period of time, I was traveling around the country 2 to 3 days a week, doing lectures and teaching and doing a lot of stuff with other health professionals. As I started to travel around, I would mention something in my introduction everywhere I went about the work that our church was doing. And they started getting inundated with requests. And so the Key Ministry came about actually in 2002 as a separate organization to help churches around the country be able to serve the same kinds of kids and to address the same kinds of challenges that our church was wrestling with here in suburban Cleveland. And back at that time, looking at what was available in the context of disability ministry, Johnny and Friends was sort of the biggest, was the biggest player on the block at that time. And a lot of the stuff that was out there and a lot of the resources that were out there focused specifically on folks who had physical disabilities. The challenge that we were seeing in the kids that we were looking to serve is that a lot of the disabilities that they had were quote unquote hidden disabilities, in that if you were to take a look at the child in a still photograph, you wouldn't have any reason to believe that there was anything that was going on that was an issue or a problem. But it's these hidden disabilities, significant emotional, behavioral, developmental, neurologic conditions, where there aren't outwardly apparent physical symptoms, that represent the vast preponderance of disabilities that one sees in kids. And so that from the very beginning, one of the ways we looked at setting ourselves apart, our original mission was to help churches to minister with families of kids with these quote unquote hidden disabilities, which we to this day find are oftentimes very poorly understood in the church.
Sure. So what are the challenges of working with children who have hidden disabilities, as you mentioned, and bringing them to a life of grace in Jesus Christ and evangelizing them in essence?
Well, one of the, there's a parent who, or a couple who brought two of their sons to see me, who attended our church and were involved in a disability awareness Sunday. And, you know, both of their boys, when they were young, had pretty severe symptoms of ADHD. And the mom and dad got up and were telling their story of what it was like, you know, being a young couple looking for a church when they had a couple of boys who had some pretty serious issues with self-control. And one of the things that the mom said that stuck with me to this day is that, quote, people in the church believe they can tell when a disability ends and bad parenting begins. You know, and so that the first challenge that a lot of our families face is, you know, finding a place a family can go to worship where the parents don't feel condemned or judged because of some of the challenges that these kids experience. You know, in that, when you're dealing with a child where there isn't, you know, something obvious going on, where they, you know, child has, say, like Down syndrome, you know, or cerebral palsy, or they're confined to a wheelchair. A lot of folks, you know, in the church in particular, can be very judgmental and view some of the challenges that these kids have, you know, as a problem related to parenting. And, you know, that for many of our families is a big obstacle in terms of them being able to do church. Now, there are certain strains or there are certain subcultures within the more biblically orthodox Protestant churches, shall we say, that have taken the interpretation that a lot of what we call mental illness is really related to a sin problem. And, you know, it's because it's because there's some specific spiritual issue or impediment that folks haven't worked through or that they're wrestling with, that they're experiencing a lot of these kinds of symptoms. So that there tends to be a lot of shaming that goes on. And we find that for a lot of our families, that they may have wanted to do church at one point, but had some sort of negative experience that has made it very difficult for many of them to be able to go back.
Yeah, that seems scary in today's culture of churches, and a little bit surprising because the gospel is totally counter to that. It's an invitation. It's worship is is something that is expected of all people. Worship of God is something that's expected of all people. But if they feel that the environment for them isn't conducive to worshiping, then they're not going to go. And so that's a big challenge. And you've overcome that in some different ways. Talk to us a little bit about the online church that you've offered to disability families. It's quite a large online church.
Well, let me back up for a minute and kind of get at some of the some of the reasons for a minute why doing church is such a challenge for a lot of the families that we're talking about. And that, first, one of the things I think that we see a lot of churches wrestle with is that when they typically think about disability, they think about these conditions where somebody is disabled all of the time in every environment. And so that what we've come to think about as quote unquote special needs ministry, involves kids with intellectual disabilities, kids on the deep end, say like of the autism spectrum, who, have very little capacity for say verbal communication or interaction. Again, kids with more severe developmental disabilities. But the disabilities that we're talking about and why I think it's so hard for churches and for other people to get their head around this is a lot of our kids, because of the nature of their conditions, they have disabilities where they're disabled some, but not all of the time, in some, but not all of the environments in which they're expected to function. Mm. And so that a few years ago, we did this online Inclusion Fusion web summit. And one of our speakers was a guy named Ben Connor, who is a theology professor who was running small groups for teens and young adults with Asperger's syndrome on the high end of the autism spectrum. And one of Ben's constructs really shaped my thinking on this, in that his argument is that, as a culture, our culture and the environments in which we expect people to function are oftentimes a source of disability. And so that, for example, it would not be unusual. I can think of, here's a kid that I had seen in our practice, for example, who had a severe issue with agoraphobia, where, bright kid, great athlete, was doing well in school. His parents had him in a Catholic school, and one of the things that they were required to do was to go to Mass. And that his challenge is that he would get these incapacitating panic attacks in confined places that were crowded, where it was hard to leave without drawing attention to oneself. And so that, again, most of the stuff that he was able to do during the day wasn't a significant issue for him at all, but because this was a very clear expectation going to Catholic school, he wasn't able to stay there when, despite some fairly aggressive efforts to treat that particular struggle didn't get better. When you think about like other examples of this, is that, you can be an honor student in school and be very successful and struggle with social anxiety. Or, oftentimes, say like our kids, who have issues with ADHD, are oftentimes, some of the most competent video gamers you would ever imagine, because if you give them a task that they're interested in, they focus extremely well. If you take them, or if you put them into an environment where there's too much visual stimulation going on around them, or if they're asked to pay attention to an interesting topic or task, they will begin to struggle at that point in time. And so the part of how we've been conceptualizing this is that for the kinds of families that we talk about, there are oftentimes very significant barriers to them being able to be involved in church because of the nature of the environments in which we do ministry and what's expected of people to be able to function and to thrive in those environments.
I see how that really is an issue, and boy, you're doing so much important work. You're doing so much important work that's really groundbreaking and probably helping so many people through this ministry. It's quite incredible to see and watch and hear about.
Go ahead.
I wanted to focus for a second on the different ways that when you have a success story, when you see a success story that really breaks through and begins to help a family that is, as you say, you know, doing church or going to church now, and then they go out and help others do church. What are some of those common things? And I don't want to put everybody into one box here. My intention is not to do that. But what are some of those things that you're seeing from families and from parents and from maybe even some teens themselves or some young adults themselves that have a disability beginning to help others become more aware of Christ's love and grace in their lives?
Well, yeah, I got a great example off the top of my head that one of the people who used to work for our ministry is a woman named Katie Weatherby. And Katie is now working in the disability services office at Notre Dame College here in suburban Cleveland. But Katie had been with our ministry for a long time, and she, together with a woman named Jolene Filo, wrote a wonderful book called Every Child Welcome that I would very much recommend to any of your listeners. You know, it's a fabulous resource for people who are serving or volunteering in a church with lots of practical help and strategies for, you know, welcoming kids with a full range of disabilities into church and into our worship environments, you know, and into our Christian education programming. Well, Katie had a daughter, Annie, who around age 5 had a congenital condition where she experienced a significant stroke. And, you know, Annie, you know, clearly has, you know, a heart for God, you know, had received a fair amount of support from folks in a special education arena going through school, and became very passionate about being able to sort of tap into those experiences and develop a great sensitivity to reaching out to others. So that Annie for a long time had been involved with serving in the special needs ministry at the church that their family was attending. She was instrumental in starting a program in their local public school system to pair up kids from junior and senior high school with younger kids who had significant disabilities, you know, to befriend them, to mentor them, and to include them in a lot of the activities in terms of, like, you know, dances, proms, other extracurricular activities that were being offered by the school system. Annie felt called and very passionate about going into this and, you know, working with kids who had disabilities and special needs, and went away to Calvin College in Michigan, where she graduated this past weekend with a degree, and, you know, is going to be continuing to serve kids on the autism spectrum in one of the two jobs that she's taking on after graduation. And, you know, we have seen time and time again where oftentimes, you know, it's the you know, the pastor who had a child where they had to wrestle with this, that becomes, you know, the most effective spokesperson, the most effective person to reach out to other families within their sphere of influence. One of the things that we were involved with as a ministry is we helped a number of churches start respite as an outreach ministry, and that we oftentimes find that the families touched by respite will then, you know, when they experience churches welcoming, start showing up on, you know, Sundays at like weekend worship services and start inviting their other friends who they're networked with to come. And, you know, so I think that God oftentimes will use these circumstances, you know, as a way of positioning people within their sphere of influence to be able to share his love with the other people around him.
Beautiful. That's so wonderful that you're seeing some action take place in the lives of people who have disabilities. And that is so encouraging to see, or families and parents and church leaders, because this is an important thing. It's something I don't think has a whole lot of awareness. Is that something that you're finding as well, that people are not necessarily aware of the disabled in their churches, or if they are, they don't minister to them properly?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways, Bill, again, I would challenge you and ask you whether or not that is a bit of sort of an ableist perspective in looking at this. I mean, you know, after all, Scripture says that everyone who's part of the body of Christ has gifts. And one way of looking at this is that, you know, that the church misses out on having access to those gifts when we're not intentional about including everyone. And so that, I mean, it doesn't say that, you know, only people with college diplomas have gifts. It doesn't say, you know, it doesn't say that, you know, only valedictorians have gifts. It doesn't say that, you know, only athletes have gifts. You know, God gives everyone gifts that, you know, are to be used in terms of, you know, building the church, you know, and growing the body of Christ. And that, you know, to think that, you know, to think that folks, you know, who may have a disability don't have those gifts, you know, denies what Scripture teaches.
Exactly. Boy, so well said. So well said. I also want to ask you about this, because, you know, the gospel is, throughout it, there's countless number of times in the New Testament where Jesus is seen healing somebody who is blind, or with the man with the withered hands, or all of those things. You know, and do you find that young people or children wrestle with that, especially as they're coming to a life of grace in Christ and knowing about it? They say, hey, look, Jesus heals that man. Why doesn't he heal me? And what is your response to that? And also, you know, is there, if he doesn't physically heal there, in, and even, you know, in a hidden disability, if he doesn't physically heal that abnormality in their lives, how is he using that gift? How is he using that blessing, if we can call the disability a blessing, in their lives to help others? And is there a struggle that you're seeing through even the family and wrestling with that disability?
I see that sometimes. I mean, I see it sometimes in kids. I actually probably see this a lot more often in adults. And in particular, this will come up in the construct of folks who have maybe mental health disabilities. You have somebody who's wrestling with intense anxiety or depression, or some people literally get to the point where they're, you know, thinking about or contemplating suicide. And you know, they, you know, they're faithful. You know, they pray about this stuff on a regular basis, and they wonder, well, why doesn't, you know, God always take it away? I mean, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. And instead of this, you know, sort of understanding, like people would take a look at something like, you know, Philippians 4:6-7, you know, not be anxious about anything, but in everything through prayer and petition, give thanks to the, you know, to the Lord your God. And, you know, and they look at that and there's this presumption, you know, that makes a lot of these conditions worse for people who are Christians, that if God's not taking it away, it's because you don't have enough faith. I mean, it's rather presumptuous of us, you know, to be able to understand what God's doing in these situations, because we have to keep in mind that he knows the past, he knows the present, and he knows the future. We don't. And, you know, from what I've seen so far, he has done nothing whatsoever that would make me not trust, you know, that he loves us infinitely and has our best interests in mind. But it may be that in a lot of these instances that God, you know, sort of like, you know, similar to like the thorn in the flesh that's Paul experienced, that he talked about like in his epistles, that if God values relationship with us over everything else, and if that was so important to God that he sent his only son to die on a cross so that, you know, through that sacrifice that we might be reconciled to him and to have relationship with him. If a disability causes us to turn more to God and to depend more upon God and to grow in that relationship with him, could you make the argument that God oftentimes uses disability for our good?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the reason why I kind of phrased it as, is a disability, can a disability be a blessing? Because it can be a blessing if that that disability turns the heart and the will more toward God. And that is a wonderful thing for families and for those who suffer from a disability themselves, for them to realize. And I know in my own case of struggling with disability, I've wrestled with that question, you know, at different points in my life. And I wouldn't say it's a constant theme, but I've wrestled with it at different points in my life. And it is, and it can be a blessing, and embracing that. I think that the biggest thing is for people listening that may have a disability, or know somebody who does, or is struggling with a family member who does, is really embracing all, and you said it, embracing all the good that person is, and seeing all the good that person provides to the church. And as you said, we all have gifts. So looking at the gifts versus looking at the those things, and remembering that made perfect in weakness, as St. Paul says. So, wow, just awesome. And I applaud you for all your work, and thank you so much, Dr. Steve, for being with me today on Patchwork Heart Radio. I want to ask you a little bit about the different resources that you have to help families and churches and parents with this at Key Ministry. Of course, your website is keyministry.org, but tell us a little bit about the blog, and tell us a little about what you guys focus on doing, because you do so much with you know, training churches and helping people. Talk a little bit about what you offer people.
Well, for example, on the church side, some of the things that we would do is that, you know, we have some very extensive resources, as you described, on our blog, which is church4everychild.org. If people want to go ahead and access that, so that we have very detailed resources in terms of helping people to understand the impact of, say, like a lot of common mental health conditions, ADHD on spiritual development, impact of anxiety on spiritual development, helping people to better understand some of the spiritual challenges that, say, like kids with Asperger's might encounter, how you know, looking at the impact of trauma. So all of those resources are available through the blog. One of the things that we thought was really important and where we've tried to fill a niche is that, you know, there are lots of, I mean, there are lots of excellent books, lots of excellent resources out there, but a lot of times the challenge is that if a church is looking to undertake this kind of a ministry, we want to be able to provide them with a relationship and not just resources, so that we have some experienced church consultants who work with our team, who are folks who themselves are leading or have led intentional disability and special needs ministries, who are available, you know, to talk with pastors, ministry leaders, key volunteers that are looking to become more intentional and grow their ministries in this area, and to come alongside them as they wrestle with some of the challenges associated with doing this type of ministry. We oftentimes do a lot of training, both live at, you know, at larger conferences. You know, if it's an opportunity that's impactful enough, we may go to a specific church and train churches around the region. Increasingly, we're using tools like video conferencing to be able to do this. And you're going to see over the next few months more and more training opportunities that we're going to be creating, you know, for churches to be able to, you know, to access, you know, to access free training from anywhere over the internet. One of the things that we do right now is that we have a video roundtable on the topic of disability ministry every third Wednesday at noon Eastern time that people can sign up for. And I would encourage folks who are interested in, you know, tapping into this stuff to check out our website, check out our Facebook page. You know, so if you go to Key Ministry on Facebook, we have a second Facebook page, and we're going to be launching a new website in early June, specifically for a new division of our ministry called Key for Families. And where the goal of that site is going to be to develop lots of practical resources and support and online communities for families that is tied into a network of participating churches around the country, where we're hoping to use this as a way of making introductions and connecting people who access our ministry online to churches in their local area where they and their children can then worship in the physical presence of other Christ followers. And so that our other blog, the one for families, can be found at specialneedsparenting.net. And their Facebook page for the time being is called Not Alone. That's going to be transitioning to Key for Families over the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Fantastic. This has just been a wonderful conversation, and I thank you so much for spending time with us and our listeners, explaining all of these things to them and maybe drawing some initial awareness to this. And I encourage all of our listeners to visit keyministry.org to learn more, to connect. Of course, you search Key Ministry on Facebook. There's that way. And they, of course, you have Twitter as well. So just, you know, get involved. And really take a look at all the wonderful things that you are doing. I want to just ask you, I always kind of ask this, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you'd like to tell us?
Well, I think that we pretty much covered it. But one last thing that I would have people think about is that when it comes to folks with hidden disabilities or mental health issues, there are 7 general areas that I would throw out that are oftentimes significant obstacles or barriers to folks doing church. And, you know, we have lots of stuff about this on our website, but I think it's important for people to keep in mind the folks that we're talking about wrestling with these disabilities are oftentimes very socially isolated, and that's the first barrier. So that being intentional about reaching out to and connecting with people in your local community who are wrestling with disability, oftentimes the first step in terms of developing an effective outreach. Fear is a barrier. one's capacity for social communication is a significant barrier. If you think about it, you know, churches are very social places, and that it can be very hard for someone who has a hard time picking up on social cues or facial expression or body language or the tone and inflection of voice to negotiate our ministry environments. Sensory processing is a big issue for a lot of our kids, in that oftentimes, like the different people talking, the volume of music, the brightness of lights, coming in physical contact with other people can be intensely distressing for some folks with disabilities, and, you know, is a challenge for them in terms of doing church. One's capacity for self-control and the expectations for self-control that we see in church can be a challenge. Stigma is an enormous issue, and what's different about a lot of the folks that we see with the quote-unquote hidden disabilities is that they will flee anything where they get special treatment or it's referred to as special needs ministry, because more so than anything else, they don't want to draw attention to themselves and they want to be like everybody else. Stigma is an enormous issue that we're trying to work to overcome. And that oftentimes, and this is really tragic, is that we see these multi-generational patterns where parents oftentimes of kids who had these issues may have had the same struggles themselves, you know, and may not have been raised in the church and with a knowledge of Jesus, because, you know, the very same challenges that their kids had kept them from going to church when they were younger too. And so that the one final thought I would leave people with, since you brought this issue up, is that no church is going to be able to minister to every kid and every family impacted by disability. But every church can be intentional about ministry to some families with some disabilities, so that we shouldn't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. And that, you know, every church, I think, could, you know, sit down and start to think about where could we go ahead and take the next step in terms of welcoming more people in our surrounding communities, you know, into our local congregations who are wrestling with disability.
Wonderful. Well, I applaud your work so much, and thank you so much for your time and spending it with us today to share these issues. They're just so important, and they're so needed to be addressed, and you're doing a wonderful work to address it. Again, the ministry website, keyministry.org. Dr. Steve Gersovich is the founder and the president. So thank you so much, Dr. Steve, for spending time with us here today and sharing all of this. I hope to talk to you many more times in the future.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for helping us to be able to get the word out.
Of course. Well, this has been an episode of Patchwork Heart Radio. I'm your host, Bill Snyder. Until next time, from all of us here at Patchwork Heart Ministry, God bless and keep beating to your Catholic heart. This episode of Patchwork Heart Radio is a production of Patchwork Heart Ministry and may not be reproduced or transmitted without the expressed written consent of Patchwork Heart Ministry. For more information about Patchwork Heart Ministry, visit patchworkheart.org or call 424-704-3278. That's 424-704-3278.